This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Create at State, making connections that count. In this interview, I talk with Dr. Justin Castro. He's an assistant professor of history and is the chair of the history department at Arkansas State. Also, graduate student Tara Leperano joined Dr. Castro to talk about research involving women in games. Leperano did research involving an Arkansas connection to gaming. She was awarded a strong research fellowship for her research about early video game designers. Castro talked about Tara and her work.
Known Tara since she was an undergraduate. She was in a couple of my classes starting maybe a couple of years ago. And she can probably address this a little bit better, but her interests originally were on female characters in video games. Kind of, you know, how gender is portrayed, the sexualization of women in video games. And even though that hasn't been, I like video games, but I haven't really studied them as kind of an academic. But I have worked, most of my research has been focused on the history of technology, kind of history of technological networks and development. And in that sense, we kind of discovered there's a lot of crossover there, of course. And so where she's been geared at kind of really focusing on the details of video games and specifically their development, I've been kind of helping to bring the broader context of technological development into the project is kind of where I see my role at the moment.
Right. So let's talk about this. Tara, tell us a little about how did you get involved in this research of video games and kind of the history of that?
Well, I've always loved video games. And so when I was asked about my areas of interest, that was obviously one area that I wanted to explore, but I didn't really know how to explore it in a way that was historical or in a way that I could make academic. And that's where Dr. Castro really came in and helped me, is he sort of threw a few topics my way and said, this is a way that we can sort of approach this in a historical way. And so through that, you know, I teamed up with him with his history of technology, and I was very interested in women in video games. And we found this developer that I was very interested in, and that's sort of where this project started and where it's sort of going now, and it's branching off into a few different directions. But yes, that's where it started.
So tell me a little bit about this research that you're doing, if you don't mind, please.
So the original research was about a developer from Little Rock. Her name was Danielle Bunton Berry. She made video games in the 80s and 90s before she passed. And one of the most interesting things about her was that she is also a transgender woman. And so that really piqued my interest in terms of gender studies and women's studies. But she was also a very prominent video game developer. And so I approached Dr. Castro about how to make this into a full thesis. And in that terms, or in those terms, you know, I was able to branch off into her work and sort of early video game technology and early computer technology to make this into a fully fledged project.
And when you're talking about video games, what kinds of video games did she design? Were there games that we might commonly know, you know, from back in that time?
So you probably don't know any of her games. Her most prominent game was called Mule. And she developed video games for computers. So around the time she was prominent, Will Wright made The Sims. He was really inspired by her, but for the most part, her games are a little lesser known. They were very prominent in the 80s, but now most people don't know really who she is. So.
Right. But now this is very interesting because of not just game design, but I guess, Dr. Castro, how game design and that has kind of had an influence as the culture has continued to evolve over the past several decades.
Yeah, I think it's important when you think of you know, where game designs are now, but I don't think a lot of people think about how that kind of affects our social interaction and our decisions. And I'm not so much talking about as like the common kind of violence in video game trope that you hear a lot of, but more like how many controllers do people have a split screen? Are people connected via the internet? What choices are available that the people that are playing can make? In a sense, these have larger social, I think, consequences in some ways. Do they tend to lead to kind of more democratic openness, to more sharing? Do they tend to kind of dictate terms and kind of more almost kind of an authoritarian practices? How do people's kind of personal decisions and choices and how they design these games affect the way that people can play them? And what does this say about larger kind of broader networks of sharing information and discussion? So Daniel Buttonberry, for example, you didn't have as much of the kind of, you know, there was no headset internet kind of playing. So we're now where you have different screens and everyone's on their video games kind of collaborating this way. But what was interesting, I think, for me, what I've learned is he was interested in almost kind of bringing a board game mentality to it, as of bringing multiple people and controllers and things together before that was really ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, it was a very, for him, kind of collaborative project, and that it was an idea of using video games to collaborate on common goals. Maybe Tara can talk about it, but I thought this was really kind of, you see this a lot in his game Mule, actually, which has its own like weird cult following. I didn't know about it. I would love to actually play it. I've looked it up and seen it. But I don't know if it exists on a way that you can play it on a kind of modern console. I think you would need to actually have the technology that it was built on.
So for a lot of young students who would not even kind of know what we're talking about here, because you're talking about, you know, today's technology, we have the PlayStation games, the consoles, you have all these different things here. Back in that time, it was totally different. Kind of tell us a bit about a game like Mule, how you would even begin to play a game like that.
So you would need a home computer. And obviously computers are expensive today. During that time, they would cost you somewhere between $600 and $1,000. And then you need the game. And for Mule, up to four players could play, but you all had to be in the same room and you all played on the same screen. So you would collaborate. And Mule is a strategic sort of economic game. And so you would collaborate to buy pieces of land. You could also compete and sort of try to block characters, other players, to advance your own goals. But as Dr. Castro said, for Daniel Buttonberry, it was more about collaboration. And so she tried to make games that were very collaborative, but there you had the option to be very competitive and sort of try to prohibit other characters from advancing in the game.
You definitely wouldn't have any of the things like today the games are so visual, you know, and that, but it seemed like that in games in that time in the 80s and that you're dealing with more of the mental kind of games, as you said, the board games more or less than the games that are available for today.
Yeah, or even as you said that, it made me kind of think of like Dungeons and Dragons or something, right? Where you have it's kind of so much of it's in your imagination. I mean, from what I've been able to see of the images of Mule, I mean, it is kind of like you have these little, you don't even, it has to be described what it is. I think you talked about that in some of your own work. And like, so you have these images, but they're not very clear. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about the consoles that were coming out, right, this is the time of kind of the first Atari, Commodore, you know, which came out when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And they were great because before that, you didn't really have anything like that. There was no visualizations. But a lot of it was still left to this kind of mental, kind of imaginative component to it that you had to bring to it, I think. I don't know, maybe Tara can talk to that a little more.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they tell you that a triangle on the screen is a mountain, you know, and you're on this other planet, and it really relies on these prompts that they give you. But it definitely is a big leap from sort of text-based games where you actually do have at least a few visuals to tell you, you know, what you're looking at or help the players to get more engaged in the game. And it really helped with engagement because it's more tactile, it's more visual, rather than just having simple text on a screen. You can see a few of the things that you're doing at least. So,
Tara Leporano and also Justin Castro joining us here on the Created State podcast on KASU. Tara, you said that you were very interested in the role that women had played in that. Kind of, let's talk a little bit about that and kind of your thoughts as you were diving into the research and specifically about maybe females being detected or depicted, I guess, in games.
Yes. So I was initially interested in female characters and how they are visualized in games, and one of the main characters I focused on was Lara Croft, because her image has evolved so much over time. And I looked at the sexualization of female characters and found that, you know, interestingly, as time goes on, sexualization of female characters becomes less and less. They become more realistic, more proportionate. But in fighting games, they are still very heavily sexualized. And in terms of female developers, we still, even today, have a very small proportion of female developers, even though female video game players has shot up. And the amount of female video game players in today's society is about equal to male. But developers, as far as I can remember, about 15% female, and the rest is male. So representation in video games has definitely improved, and female players, the number of female players has improved, but we're still sort of lacking in the area of female developers.
And that's a huge problem, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Not only in terms of representation, but also, you know, in terms of societal impact. And there are a lot of programs now that are trying to get women into computer science and the sciences more in general. And I definitely think we could use more of that, especially in the video game industry.
Right. Fascinating research. In fact, this was something that there's been a huge award announcement, I guess, that's coming up. Kind of tell us about this involving Terra, if you don't mind, please.
Yeah, we're super proud of this. We're proud of any time any of our students get fellowships or awards, especially to do such really interesting research. And so this all started when we were trying to track down Daniel Buttonberry's papers, if she had any. And Tara discovered that they were at the Strong National Museum of Play, which is in Rochester, New York. And, you know, we automatically decided, well, you know, if you're going to write this thesis, you have to get there and you have to, you know, examine these papers. In addition to those papers, there's all sorts of papers from the creator of The Sims, from a number of kind of video game designers of that era. And so in order to kind of broaden this out and to kind of understand the context of what's going on to better delve into Buttonberry's life, we really wanted to get, Tara there. Of course, it's always a matter of funding and the availability of it's hard to get students, to these kind of archives. And so we were definitely willing to, get as much support to her. But it was only if we kind of last minute stumbled upon it where we realized, I was like, you know, we need to make sure that there's, we're not missing any kind of fellowship opportunities and things that are there. And Tara found the Strong fellowship that they had. And admittedly, we only had a couple of weeks to throw it together. Mm-hmm. And she really dove into it hard, which I appreciate. And I helped kind of polish parameters and talk a little bit about how these kind of grants and fellowships are written. But all said in the end, she was able to put together a really good proposal and it was accepted. So you're looking at a Strong Research Award fellowship winner here, and they're going to be giving her financial support so she can fly to Rochester next month, right?
Yes.
To conduct research in those archives, which will be a huge boon for kind of writing this larger project, maybe leading to some publications, presentations. That's where I think we hope to go with it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And what do you hope to be able to get, Tara, from these archives? How will this be able to help with your thesis and your presentation?
So the archives holds all of Daniel Buttonberry's personal papers, along with the papers about all of her video games. So that is the main reason why I wanted to go there. But also, just in general, there are tons of articles about early video game development and sort of the implications of early video games, along with, as Dr. Castro said, they have papers for a lot of prominent developers, such as Ralph Baer and Will Wright, also the creators of games such as Civilization. So I'd like to really get in there and look at the different developers, but also more generally sort of look at papers about the early development of computer technology and the early development of video game technology.
That's fantastic. So How has Dr. Castro helped you and impacted you in the work that you've been doing and kind of, you know, in your graduate work and all that? How has he kind of made that impact in your life?
Oh, he has been very helpful, and he has made a tremendous impact. I think the biggest thing is just showing me that this is an area where historians can really dig in and find interesting scholarship or find interesting areas to write scholarship on. But also, you know, just guiding me in the right directions in terms of, you know, how to do research, how to write papers in a professional manner, how to put together, like, the fellowship paperwork and that type of thing. He's helped me in both the professionalization and also in terms of, like, research and finding these topics of interest.
Does this make you kind of think about maybe doctoral work possibly in the future?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, as he said and other professors have told me, you know, whenever you really start digging into your master's thesis, you'll really see whether you want to pursue a PhD or whether, you know, this is not for you. And so it has definitely pushed me towards looking at doctoral studies and that type of thing.
Fantastic. And what have you learned from Tara? And how has Tara kind of impacted your work and your life?
Well, it's made me rethink what I do. And that is, it's broadened kind of my ideas of kind of, I've written a whole lot about kind of late 19th century and 20th century. And so it's kind of brought me to today a little bit more. Though I think the development of history, or I mean of video games, has gone on for long enough that it has become a viable historical subject now, right? So there are all these archives that we can trace, and now from time, if we look back from kind of the 70s up, I mean, from now, that's, you know, it's going on 40, 50 years. And so there's a long time where we can start to look at how these games evolved. But it's made me, I've always been really interested in networks, like infrastructure, how things are connected and how those lead to the way we interact, how we govern each other, how we talk to each other. And I hadn't really, I've played video games. I like video games since playing Atari when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't brought video games actually in my mind into that kind of discussion, into how are those actually directing what we do. And I was, you know, playing, like, me and my brother, we love Civilization, so we play mm-hmm. those games. And he was just bugging me the other day, like, hey, we need to get online and, you know, build our stuff together. And it makes me think about, you know, all the stuff that I've done with, like, radio and roads. And really there's a kind of a layover now in this digital realm. It's almost like a virtual realm, a virtual infrastructure that shapes our society just as much as the material. And so that's kind of been a revelation to me. I mean, I guess I knew it was there, but I hadn't really thought so
sure.
much about it.
But also how gaming plays a part of that infrastructure as well.
Exactly. And gaming, I don't know if, you know, people realize this, but like games have also been used in very serious, like, infrastructural developments. And so there'd be like municipal governments and stuff would actually use gaming as a way to develop the way that streetlights work and things.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a very serious component to like governance and city work and gaming. So they're not completely separate. And then there's all just this informal way that we do it. So to me, that's been really awesome. It's kind of broadened the way my own studies of history of technology and something I hope to bring into the classroom.
Yeah, you know, it kind of, so as you were saying that, I kind of did a little bit of a Google search real fast. You know, it makes me think of like the 1983 movie War Games. It had Matthew Broderick in it, yeah. and that, you know, you kind of think of that particular kind of, you know, how a game simulation can really change a whole lot of things, you know, even back in that time, and then kind of how it's all kind of connected. It's kind of something that a lot of people thought, well, you know, back in 83, could that really, well, yeah, now it really could happen. I mean, some 35, 40 some years later, so.
And if we live in a society that's a smart society, right, where
right.
everything's connected, everything's taken everyone's pulse, everyone's on video, everyone's interacted, someone programs all these things, right? Mm-hmm. And it's in that sense, it's very similar to, it is essentially game design. Mm-hmm. And so game designers in some ways are actually gaining a lot of power. And so I think the ability to understand how that evolved, kind of what, you know, how that started, how those have developed over the years, and kind of where these people come from is really important to understanding our society today and where it's going.
Yeah. Tara, what would you like to add about that?
I definitely agree with Dr. Castro, you know, and one of the things I talk about in my own research is, you know, before, whenever print wasn't accessible as it is today, or as it became, you know, aristocrats and priests would control the print, and they would have massive amounts of power. And so that's sort of how I relate programmers today to sort of the past is, you know, we have to look at how much power programmers really have as we live in a society that's increasingly technological and as the technology is increasingly complicated. You know, what type of power are these people holding and what does this mean for the rest of everybody in society, you know, people who don't have access to this power, who can't program like these other people can. So.
Very good. Great conversation today. Tara, congratulations on the work you've been doing in the fellowship and that. I know you're excited to be able to go to New York here pretty soon for that.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming up and bringing her along, Dr. Castro. Appreciate it so very much. Anything else you'd like to add before we let y'all run? I'll start with you, Justin.
No, just thanks for having us. I'm really excited about Tara's work. I think it's immensely... Not always common that we get something that's so fun and so exciting, yet also so important and kind of brought together. And I think Tara's done kind of an amazing job of doing that. And I think her work's going to be really important in showing how game design and these things are not only important for kind of entertainment, but for society and kind of power relations and the future of where societies are going in general.
Very good. Tara?
Yeah, just thank you for having me. Dr. Castro, thank you for all of your assistance. I'm very excited about where my research is going. And yeah, that's it.
And that was Dr. Justin Castro and also Tara Leperano talking about research on the Create at State podcast. To hear more interviews like this one, you can subscribe to the Create at State podcast at the Create at State podcast page on KASU.org. It's also available on iTunes or Google Play, or you can listen on the NPR app. Also, it's on Spotify and also iHeartRadio and many others. Also, we would love for you to leave us a review and also rate the podcast as well. You are listening to A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves.